This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
God awful. You remember when I did my shows at night, I used to love doing the Boston accent, but I was a little bit better at it because I spent more time in Boston because of hockey. And I haven't been there in a while. So I'd go up there and listen to EEI just for the callers. The callers alone were just special.
Better accents. Paul Feinbaum.
Oh, my God.
Or Boston.
Yeah. Paul's show, which is just the SEC. And so you're getting SEC football fans calling in. That's special, too. So you really, it's a mix. It depends.
Mr. Feinbaum.
It's a ridiculous accent. Like, just everybody's just
the
from
mix?
The South.
Yeah,
the
mix. Oh, you mean like people calling?
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
But I like
let
it.
Me tell you, Paul Feinbaum.
Yo, they get mad,
I
too.
I think he's a chicken butt sniffer.
You get a lot of that.
You get that. But I'm telling you, the calls you get up in New England about, especially the Patriots, it's precious.
Your Boston accent isn't all that bad, though.
No, like I said, it was better at another time. Although Rick DiPietro will tell you that it's always been bad. So who knows? But it is Bart and Hahn. I'm Bart Scott. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. And it's hour number three, Bart Scott. When it's hour number three, what does that mean?
It's the power hour, 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 hour.
It is. And it's you that started the show with some power, as you were mad about the results of the MVP voting in the NBA this year. Now, we'll call this Getting It Done, brought to you by Granger. According to Woj, Nikola Jokic is going to win the MVP for a second straight year. He had a historic season statistically. He did. It's fact. But this was not an easy vote because Joel Embiid had a fantastic season as well. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's won it twice already, he also had a really good season. But I'm telling you right now, you can argue whether or not Embiid deserved it, but it doesn't matter. Jokic won it. That's two MVPs, Bart. And with that in mind, he's reached that point which we get to when anyone wins an MVP in any sport. It's time to win.
Yeah.
And you, all right, this year he had injuries. His team was ravaged, and he still dragged his team to the playoffs. Great. But next year, Jokic has got, like, I'm wondering, will he face the same pressure? Will he face the same criticism that Russell Westbrook, James Harden, like, you need to do what Giannis did last year.
Yeah.
After he put two in his pocket. Then he took his team to the finals and won it. Winning that chip, all the pressure's off. Now you've achieved it all. Like, that's it. That's the Kwan. You know, that's everything. So he's got to do it, Bart. Like, you could say whether or not he deserved it. He got it. He's got it on his mantle. He's got it on his trophy case. Okay? That's it. But, I mean, I'm curious to see if he's going to face the same criticism, if he's going to face the same pressure to now take the Denver Nuggets and win a title. And can he do it?
Or at least get him in the finals.
Can he do it?
Yeah.
Can he lead that team to the championship? Because that's really what it's about. Mike Malone, Denver Nuggets, that franchise, Jamal Murray, that's expectations have to be for them. Not hopes, not dreams. Expectations have to be for Nikola Jokic to win a championship. That's all that's left to do. Because you got these MVPs now. You've raised your status to become one of the greats of your generation. Now you've got to lock it up by winning a chip. And I don't know if they can. I don't know. I don't know if he can win a championship.
I mean, you look at the West is only going to get better.
That's my point. Look around.
I mean, Utah may be gone. You hear reports. Where would Rudy Gobert? Who said they would be in the market for Rudy Gobert?
Everybody.
Yeah, but I saw somebody. Toronto.
That's not a bad spot.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably fit in a little better, too. It's like a
international kind of city. Yeah. But Giannis took advantage of, you could argue that Giannis and the Bucks were able to take advantage of an East that had, you know, the Nets got hurt and they barely beat them, but they beat them. They got hurt. The Hawks were knocking off everybody. The Celtics were not that good. Like, the Hawks go to the conference final. Like, they weren't really expected to do that. It wasn't a great season in the East. So they took advantage of that, get to the finals, and then they're able to overcome the Suns. But this year, you know, you see the West and you see what's in the West. The Warriors are kind of back. The Suns certainly are where they are. Luka and the Mavs are letting you know there's something special brewing there with Jason Kidd as the head coach.
The Clippers are going to be back.
The Clippers being healthy, right, next year, what are they going to be? So it's not like Jokic can look around thinking to himself, like, this is our time. There's going to be a lot of competition in the West again next year, so it's not going to be easy.
It's a lot of people's time, right? It's a lot of people, like, I mean, Kawhi Leonard's like, hey, I came here in year three of the project.
He's won a couple, but yeah.
But we're in year three of the project, Clippers. Right, before they had to figure out.
Do you expect the Lakers to suck again as bad as they sucked?
I expect them to be, like, the sixth seed.
Like, the Lakers can't possibly be that bad again. Not LeBron. I mean, like, you can't that happen again.
See, you always have the outliers. Who's to say that Zion doesn't stay and become happy and add that with the Pelicans?
Pelicans showed you something as well. I know. Yeah. So it's not going to be easy, but that's what's coming for Nikola Jokic. It has to be. You get two MVPs. The expectation now is, okay, you've been the best player in the league for 2 years. Now can you lead your team to a championship? And I don't think it's going to be easy to do. He's got to be Giannis, not Harden. All right, Getting It Done brought to you by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger's always there to help. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 is the number. Let's continue with the calls. Let's go to Brooklyn where Carter is here. Carter, what are you doing?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Listen, you ask this dude to stay healthy for an entire year. He does that. Last time I saw Joker's at home.
It's not a playoff award, though. It's not a playoff award. You got to remember that. It's a regular season award.
Understandable, but Joker's home. He had an amazing season. I can't take that from him. He had an amazing season. But you ask this man to stay healthy for a full year, he virtually does that, and he has the team on his back with all that's going on around him. Yes, Joker had nobody around him pertaining to Murray and pertaining to the other kid that was hurt with his back.
See, but this
they had a system already in place. That team in Philly kept changing.
Here's the thing,
it
right?
It did.
Next year, Jokic can have a better season than he had this year. No way in hell that he'll win the MVP. Because you know what? They'll have fatigue, and they'll say, well, we can't give it to somebody three times in a row, right? They'll say that, and they'll get somebody with lesser stats to beat him out.
Yeah.
That's what I hate. That's what I'm saying. The personal, you know what I'm saying, ideas and views of the voters.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You know it, and I know it. There's no way they'll give it to him three times in a row.
But
you could have gave it to LeBron three times in a row. You could have gave it to Jordan three times in a row.
Right, but it's not like it's like five guys voting for this thing. There's a lot of members of the media voting for this.
But you know how they do it. And it's about
the numbers are
how you feel about them personally. And also, next year, if Jokic does what he does this year, next year, I guarantee you he won't get it.
Devin Booker.
Because at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, Giannis should have got it, if that's the case. Mm. 3 years in a row.
Look, I go to the number.
If
it's a hard decision to make, you break the tie with the numbers, and the numbers tell you that Jokic had a historic season.
What about the winning? What about where your team is?
He got his team to the playoffs in the end.
Okay, but you talk about Philly having a better record.
They were.
In a tougher division.
In a tougher conference.
And really, they were one win or half a win from being second in the division. They all three teams... two through four.
You can make any argument from any angle of this, but if you are a voter and you have a hard time deciding, you go to the numbers. And the numbers, as I read them to you at the beginning of the show, he was number one in several analytic categories that a lot of people have never heard of, but I can give them to you, and it's just the easiest way to do it. There's nothing else to say about it. He had the historic PER, player efficiency rating, which is the highest ever. Okay, he was number one in win shares. That matters. You said winning, that matters. Offensive win shares, number one. Number two in defensive win shares.
What is win shares?
It's your impact on winning.
Oh, yeah. So you're saying that...
Box plus minus, number one. Offensive box plus minus and defensive box plus minus and value over replacement player. All of it, he's the best.
So basically the basketball version of war. So you mean to tell me you take Joel Embiid out of there with no Harden, then what is that team?
Huh? Again, I'm not. We're not. That's a different conversation.
I'm saying.
I'm talking about.
How does Jokic get a higher WAR than Embiid?
I don't know the math. I'd have to do the math.
I don't understand how he's worth more when it comes to winning than Joel Embiid.
Because that's what the numbers tell you. When he's not in the game versus when he's in the game. Simple as that. All right. 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. Man, a lot of people want to sound off on this. We will get to your calls coming up. Also, the latest on Ja Morant is coming up in just a few seconds. And the Grizzlies as they prepare for Game 4 against the Warriors. Will they do it with or without Ja Morant? We remind you, Bart and Han, ESPN Radio, is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive can help you protect home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, and RV, and more. If something wasn't mentioned that you had in mind, like a jet ski that I'd love to drive right up and down. Do you drive a jet ski on the East River? It can be. Find out if it can be covered at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE because it probably can be.
The grab of the knee is what triggered the potential injury and why we took Ja out of the game. So nothing's changed from there in terms of that was the play. And that's Ja who I'm talking about with his knee. But from what I've been told right now, there's probably a really good chance he doesn't play.
All right, it's Bart and Han. Alan Han, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio. You have the Grizzlies and the Warriors, and that series has gotten, I mean, it has been rough. It has been physical. It has been controversial. It's been everything. And right now it's 2-1 Warriors. We go to Memphis right now. You know Gary Parrish. You know him on CBS Sports College Basketball. Does a great job covering that. Also does a great job on the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN in Memphis. Gary, how we doing?
I'm great. I appreciate you guys having me.
Oh, it's good to have you. So what is the latest on Ja? I mean, Taylor Jenkins really suggesting that he doesn't think he's going to play tonight. I'm sure that'll be a game time decision, but the feeling in Memphis is probably he won't, right?
Yeah, folks are skeptical. I mean, the Grizzlies have a pattern about injury reports where usually if guys are, quote, questionable, they end up playing. And if they're doubtful, they do not. Ja has been listed as doubtful with right knee soreness. So nobody is ruling anything out. But the perspective right now is that the Grizzlies will probably try to win Game 4 in San Francisco tonight without their franchise point guard.
Okay, so you talk about they're 20-5 without Ja. Is it real belief that they can win this game, or are they just punting, saying, hey, we have a better chance and making sure that we don't put Ja at risk and try and get him back for the following game in Memphis?
I think if Ja were comfortable playing tonight, and if he is comfortable playing tonight, he'll be on the court. I don't believe this is the type of series where you give away games, particularly when you're a heavy underdog to begin with. If Ja Morant doesn't play, I'm going to assume that it's because he wasn't comfortable enough to play, or the medical staff determined he should not be on the court. If you are looking for a reason to be hopeful that the Grizzlies can keep this competitive and maybe even win the game on the road, despite being a double-digit underdog without Ja Morant, it is what you just noted. They were 20-5 in the regular season without Ja Morant. Now, some people have taken that and tried to twist it into, are the Grizzlies better without Ja Morant? That's obviously silly. They are not. You know, they just won a lot of games when he wasn't in the lineup for a variety of reasons. Some of it was schedule-induced. But this is a team that has proven time and again that they can win games without Ja. So I don't think everybody in Memphis is going to go to bed early tonight, assuming that the game isn't worth watching. People will stay up late, but obviously the odds are stacked against the Grizzlies.
It's interesting that you said, yeah, I don't know if you know you said it, that they were the underdog. They were the better team in the regular season, correct? And they're the team that said they wanted to run up the chimney.
But they are now in this game.
But you know, but what I'm saying is, like, they were the favorite going into this series. Is it something maybe, like, we talk about skipping steps all the time, and has this team suffered enough to be able to win a series against a champion that's back on their own version of redemption tour, now that they're completely whole again?
What history tells us in the NBA is that there is something to be said for learning how to win series like this. You know, Michael Jordan had to lose before he could win. Larry Bird had to lose before he could win. LeBron James had to lose before he could win. Now, it doesn't always go that way. You know, I just watched the season finale of Winning Time last night. Magic Johnson got off to a nice start. But I do think the reason the Grizzlies were significant favorites over the Timberwolves is because the Timberwolves had no idea, and the series actually played out that way, how to win games at this level. And the Grizzlies were, you know, the better team all year. But when the Golden State-Memphis series started, even though Memphis had home court advantage and Memphis was the higher seed, the Warriors were actually favored in the series, and a lot of that is because of the way Jordan Poole looked in the first round, sure, but a lot of it was people just had a hard time wrapping their mind around the idea of these still very young Grizzlies actually eliminating Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson from the NBA playoffs. And so far, if you are somebody who subscribed to that, well, you're looking smarter than the other people.
Yeah. ESPN's BPI did have the Grizzlies favored in the series. In fact, even after the first two games had them favored in the series, but that obviously changed. We're talking with Gary Parrish, host of the Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN in Memphis, and we're getting the feel from Memphis as the Warriors-Grizzlies tonight, a game you can hear on ESPN Radio, 9:30 Eastern is the tip. And just to, as you mentioned, right now the Grizzlies are 10-point underdogs in this game, and the BPI for this game has the Warriors at 60.8% favored to win this game as well. That's the impact of not having Ja Morant in this game. But, you know, Bar mentioned the 20-5. You did too, how they were able to play well without him for various reasons. But there's something about leading into this game, and I'm wondering what the fit. Look, both markets. You know, in the Bay Area, Jordan Poole did nothing wrong. In Memphis, I'm sure it's this guy should be suspended for the rest of the playoffs, right? Clearly grabbed his knee and ripped it right off. But Taylor Jenkins, I thought, walked the line a little bit by talking about it maybe too much to create an excuse. And I wonder if he's realizing that by the latest comments where he said, all right, we can't make this a narrative. How much of that do you think, because we've seen the Draymond Green flagrant, the Dylan Brooks, you know, all the things that have happened so far in this series, then leading to this, are the Grizzlies a team that is going to struggle based on the fact that it's not like Ja got hurt on a, you know, on a non-contact play or something that maybe the knee just tweaked? This was something that maybe they feel like they took our guy out.
I don't think any of this was intentional. Like, I do not think Draymond Green was trying to hurt Brandon Clark. I don't think Dylan Brooks was trying to hurt Gary Payton II. I don't believe Jordan Poole was trying to hurt Ja Morant. But the reaction you get from all of these instances are connected to each other.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Dylan Brooks was reckless in the way that he hammered Gary Payton II in the head while he was vulnerable. He deserved to be thrown out of that game. He deserved to be suspended. And there was no scenario where he wasn't going to be after Draymond had just been thrown out in game one. What happened in game three between Jordan and Ja, I don't think it was intentional, if only because it's such an odd thing to be intentional. Like, I'm going to grab a knee and push him back and twist him around. Like this is more accurately, I think, is that it was a chaotic situation with arms and limbs flying. And what happened when you slow it down, super slow-mo HD, you see what you see. But I don't think it was intentional. But because the temperature of this series has been raised to the degree that it's been raised, I think the Grizzlies will perceive it the way that they perceive it, even if most of the rest of the country, including the NBA, does not. Ja Morant was clearly upset by it. Taylor Jenkins, I think, was upset at the way Steve Kerr reacted to Dylan Brooks' play, calling it dirty.
Yeah,
and so Taylor reacted the way he reacted in this one, perhaps angling to try to get a suspension that he obviously is not going to get.
Okay, so we've seen the Dylan Brooks play, right? We've seen the Draymond Green bloody eye. We've seen now the Ja Morant knee injury. Does this continue to escalate, or do you think that the officials early on is going to try and make sure that they know that there's not going to be any shenanigans going on? And who does that favor?
I think you'll see a tight whistle early because they're going to want to keep this under control. You don't want to see any other cheap shots or risky plays, intentional or otherwise. And I would assume that a tight whistle is going to favor the home team, you know, the team that plays inside Chase Center. And so there's a lot of things working in Golden State's favor tonight. The most obvious one being Ja Morant probably isn't going to play. But I'm sure the officials are under instruction from the NBA office. Don't let this get out of hand.
Yeah.
Don't let anything slide early because we don't want to escalate it. We've now played three games in the series. Each game, somebody has been ejected. I think the NBA would like to stop that streak right here.
Gary Parrish giving us great perspective here on the Grizzlies as they go into tonight's game four against the Warriors, and they'll do so most likely without Ja Morant. Gary, something that we were talking about well before this series, but how great Ja was playing in the playoffs, what he looked like. The anticipation is he'll be all NBA. That means he's going to be eligible for the Supermax extension, the 5 years. I think it's 212, I believe. It's higher than the 180 that a Zion or an R.J. Barrett would be able to get. I mean, how fast did they sign him to this thing and just get it locked up? Does he have the value in a market like Memphis where they would give him that much money knowing they'll probably make a lot of that? Like, it's well worth the contract? Or is there some, you know, that Derrick Rose kind of fear that maybe you got to hesitate a little bit? I can't imagine there's a hesitation with this.
No hesitation whatsoever. Whatever you're allowed to give him, according to the CBA, the second they're allowed to offer it, they will offer it, and very quickly he will sign it. You know, the interesting thing to remember about Ja and why he fits so perfectly in Memphis is that this isn't somebody who, you know, grew up a grassroots star, famous by the age of 15 or 16,
right,
like Zion. This is a guy who was an unheralded high school recruit who went to Murray State and really didn't pop onto draft radars until the summer before his sophomore year. He is from small town South Carolina, who went to college in small town Kentucky. Memphis is a small market relative to NBA market. It's by far the biggest place Ja Morant has ever lived. He fits perfectly with the culture in the city. He talks like he's from Memphis. He walks like he's from Memphis. He sounds like he's from Memphis. This franchise really got very fortunate when they got the second pick in that draft, because Ja Morant has exceeded all reasonable expectations. He seems happy and comfortable in Memphis. He's the most popular athlete in Memphis by a significant margin. The first real, true superstar the franchise has ever had.
Oh,
like
Zeebo,
a guy you see in Nike commercials and Beats by Dre commercials.
Yeah.
He's made an incredible impact on and off the court, and I think the plan from the Grizzlies' perspective is give him all the money you can give him for as long as you can.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing how not winning the lottery actually helped the Grizzlies win. Hey, Gary, great to catch up with you. Great perspective, too. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right, you got it. Gary Parrish, again, you can hear him on the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN in Memphis, and also, of course, outstanding coverage, CBS Sports, college basketball columnists and analysts as well. All right, we have your calls. 8-8. Oh, by the way, don't forget, tonight, Warriors Grizzlies, ESPN Radio, 9:30 Eastern. We have the coverage for you here tonight. It's going to be a very compelling game, no doubt about it. It's been a compelling series. Coming up, we have the Chicago Bears and Justin Fields. They have new leadership in Chicago. Are they doing enough for Justin Fields? When you look at Zach Wilson's situation with the Jets, you might say no. We'll explain why they're not ready yet. Bart and Hahn, ESPN Radio.
Bart and Hahn.
It's Bart and Hahn, Alan Hahn, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio. We'll continue with your calls, of course, coming up 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. So, Bart, as we've talked about, you know, the NFL season's coming up. We got the schedule. I should say the schedule release is coming up. That's Thursday night. And it's kind of exciting in a lot of ways because, especially for us, you and I both very closely related to the Jets, you more than me. But the Jets have done a lot this offseason that gives you reason to be excited about the future and potential of this team. And Zach Wilson is their second-year quarterback now that is going to have to show you that he can do with the weapons he's been given and the improvements to the roster that they've been given to see if they can get this team to win. You know, Mac Jones in his first year was already getting the Patriots to the playoffs, and what will he look like in his second year? Trevor Lawrence, it's been a mess down there. They're still trying to clean that whole thing up with Jacksonville, but we'll see. Trey Lance, is he going to play for the Niners? Is he going to be an impact player with the Niners? And then you go to Chicago, and then there's Justin Fields. They have a whole new set up now there, new front office, new coaching staff, and they did some things in the draft that make you think, well, are they trying to make him better, or are they looking at him like, well, he's not our draft pick, and maybe they're not trying to put a lot of investment into him? There's been some criticism in Chicago about this. Here's Keyshawn Johnson talking about the Bears and their patience with Justin Fields.
I think when you look at, though, Justin Fields' situation versus, like, the New York Jets and the way that they went all out of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the way that they spent money in free agency to help Trevor Lawrence out, all three of these quarterbacks are in different situations based on where the organization is at and what they feel. I don't necessarily think Jacksonville spending the type of money upgraded the team where they're going to fight for the conference or even the division. Where the Jets, if they get hot, it could be interesting depending on what the young quarterback and Zach Wilson is all about, but there's no rush in Justin Fields. Take your time, build it the right way, and now all of a sudden you get a young quarterback that you can groom and he can be there and be happy for a long time.
Now, Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears, said on radio over the weekend that their belief in Justin Fields is sky high. And then they just feel like that he's locked in, focused. He wants to be great. He's our first in, last out guy. He's pulling the team together. You can tell the effect he's had on people. So they are all in on him. It's just they don't have the capital to do what the Jets did, right? Like, yeah, they're not ready yet to, you know, trade picks for Deebo Samuel, something like that, or even Tyreek Hill. Like, they don't have that right now. So it might mean another year of waiting with Justin Fields. But in New York with Zach Wilson, Bart, is there still a waiting period, or is it time to show something this coming season with him and this team?
What are expectations, right? You know, not only did they have a good draft last year, but, right, you know, they had a good offseason in free agency, and they had a good draft, you know, where they had a lot of draft equity. You know, I told you they basically had four first-round draft picks, and they hit seemingly on all four of those draft picks.
Right.
And then made some quality moves later in the draft. When you look at the Bears, this is a team in transition. They have to figure out what their new identity is and who's going to be their core. Because you look at, you know, where they're at, they only have $15 million in salary cap space. You know, you need about 13 or 12 to sign your draft picks, depending on how high those draft picks are. Right? They have their money invested in Robert Quinn, Eddie Jackson, Cody Whitehair. Right? It's pretty much eating up a lot of the salary cap. So they have to figure out where they're going to go moving forward. The first thing they have to do is figure out how the hell they're going to protect, you know, Justin Fields. When you think about it, it was the offensive line that really let him down last year. He's running for his life, and that's why they were hesitant to put him in, and that's why they had Nick Foles. I think they released Nick Foles, but before that, it was Andy Dalton. So you have to ask, who's the core four? You look at the wide receiver position. They let Allen Robinson go. Allen Robinson has been trying to get out of there for some numerous years. This is almost a team, they traded Khalil Mack, right, for what, fourth-round draft pick? Seemingly nothing, right? They keep bringing in all these tight ends. They keep drafting them and bringing them in. Now they can go get the Jets, you know, backup and Ryan Griffin, who's seen his better days. And, you know, Cole Kmet is somebody that they drafted from, you know, Notre Dame. Last year, Tevin Jenkins having a back surgery, you know, their first-round draft pick really, really hurt them again. But once again, Trevor Siemian finds his way on the roster, right? And let's see what Matt Eberflus can figure out. Right? Whenever you see names on your roster like Dakota Dozier, like everybody knows from the Jet days, like he was a backup journeyman at best then, and you expect him 2 or 3 years later not to be any better than he was when he was here. So this is a rebuilding year for them, and they got to figure out what they're going to do. But they aren't in the same position like Jacksonville had high draft equity. Jacksonville had a lot of money in the salary cap space to spend on new players and free agency. The Bears, not so much. So the Bears are pretty much where...
Remember it. Write it down. Take a picture. I don't give a...
The Bears are exactly where the Jets were when Joe Douglas came in, and it's going to get uglier before it gets better. They're going to have to lose and get rid of some bad contracts, and now Eberflus is going to have to build his roster with teams that he – with players that he feels fits his system. Mm. That takes a couple years.
Yeah, and that means, again, don't
3 years, 3 years of his career, it'll be year four before we figure out if he can play or not.
And that's not great. You can't have high expectations for Justin Fields and the comparisons of that quarterback draft that we saw with, what was it, five going in the top 15, right? It's all different situations. That's what makes the draft like that. Like, it's situational. It's where you land and what the situation is with that franchise before you can decide. Because if you remember from that 2018? That draft when you had five quarterbacks and everybody thought that was going to be a boom.
Yep.
You got the number one pick who has no place to play right now. Just keep that in mind. All right, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get back to your calls. Also, a great coach fired, and no one can really figure out why. When this happens, you scratch your head. We got to talk about that. And, of course, the Giants made a move today that Bart predicted would happen. It saves them some money. That's important, too. And something happening in a game today that, I don't know, do you believe in jinxes?
I believe in miracles.
Well, if I mention it on the air, is it a jinx? We'll see if it's still happening when we get back. Bart and Hahn, ESPN Radio.
Bart and Hahn.
That's Bart and Hahn, Alan Hahn, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio. Tonight you get Game 4 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You get the Rangers and the Penguins. It's on ESPN. And the Penguins lead 2-1. Listen. Pittsburgh, there's something about playing in Pittsburgh. Like Bart, what stadium in the NFL did you go to and say, like, you felt like it was, like, everyone against you? Like, the refs, all of it.
Pittsburgh.
Really?
Yeah.
It's amazing. What is it about? There's something about it. I covered a million games at the Igloo before they got the new building. And it always just felt like if there was momentum in the building, even the officials got caught up in it.
Yeah.
It's just something about it. Now, I'm not blaming that on why the Rangers struggled. But the Rangers did not play well in Game 3. Even though they made the comeback and all that, they were sloppy. They're not playing playoff hockey. They're just not. I don't know if they know they get to that level. But still, they got to win tonight. And Shesterkin's got to have a bounce-back game. That's Captain Obvious speak. But that's tonight, Game 4, 7 p.m., and you can see it on ESPN. But there was some news. Yes, I love that song. But some news from the other New York hockey team. This is a shock. It was announced this morning. After 4 seasons, the Islanders decided to move on from Barry Trotz.
Yeah, man.
Barry freaking Trotz. The guy, they went to back-to-back conference finals, and they were a goal away from going to the Stanley Cup finals last year.
Yep.
And out of the blue, it's they move on from him.
Never out of the blue.
No, that fell out of the blue. There was no – and Lou Lamoriello, the team president, said they needed a new voice.
Yep.
And that things started to slip this year. Now, things started to slip because they started the first month of the season on the road because the arena wasn't ready. And then they had COVID hit them, and they were ravaged by that. The schedule then, because of some games they had to – first, they made them play through COVID, which they had half their AHL team up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get this, but they make this move. Now,
I do.
I'd like to see why who's the next head coach is before I get a final reaction. Yeah. But this right now has me a little concerned about where the direction of this franchise, because they finally had stability.
Four years, you know, right? And you have to understand that when something like this happens out of the blue, it's usually a difference in philosophy.
Okay.
About how to build a team going forward. And ultimately, you're going to lose that to the head coach, meaning to the general manager, every single time, especially when his resume is as decorated as yours.
Well, I'll tell you what. They have a young player named Wahlstrom that he was tough on. And I wonder if there's something to do with that. Because Wahlstrom is a guy that doesn't like to be pushed, and the coach was pushing him, benching him, you know, wants him to be responsible in his own end. So I wonder if there's something to do with coaching young players, playing young players. Who knows? But a change is made after some great success. All right, we're back in 10 seconds.
Bart and Hahn.
Gleyber Torres with the home run, the walk-off. In the first game of yesterday's doubleheader between the Yankees and the Texas Rangers at the Little League ballpark in the Bronx, or at least that's, of course, what you heard from Chris Woodward, the Rangers manager, who felt like the home run to the short porch was, a little easy. And he had this to say about it.
Small ballpark, that's an easy out. in 99% of ballparks. So, the wind wasn't helping today, obviously, but, just 3-1 count. Probably going to, King is one guy that you put him back out there, you're like, okay, he's not going to give up a homer. Just happen to hit it in a little league ballpark, to right field.
Shots fired.
You know what? I don't know.
Yeah, Aaron Boone didn't like Chris Woodward's math.
His math's wrong. 99% is impossible. There's only 30 parks.
Now,
I like the comeback.
Yeah, that's good. Now, Woodward then later said he loves the Yankee Stadium and blah, blah, blah. Whatever. You said what you said.
Feeling, yeah.
Today's game. Now, the Rangers won the second game of the doubleheader yesterday.
Don't be hated.
But today.
Don't be hated.
Today.
Don't be hated.
They're playing an afternoon game.
What's going on?
Well, it's scoreless through 5.
Oh. Scoreless?
It's scoreless through 5. Nestor Cortez on the mound.
Magnum P.I. stash?
I will say that he's given up. That it's a scoreless game, so you know there's no runs.
Okay.
He's only walked one. He has struck out 8. Hmm. And that's it. I'm not telling you anything else. I'm just saying.
What else is going on?
I'm just saying.
Why not?
Because I'm just saying. It's a scoreless game.
Some people are in their cars. They don't know what's going on.
And the only thing he's allowed so far is a walk. That's it. He's struck out 8. That's all I'm saying.
So that's a hit? What?
Just saying if you're near a TV. I'm not doing it.
What's the pitch count?
Oh, that's a great question. What is his pitch? He's at 70 right now?
At this point, what, is like 20 games, 21 games?
Oh, yeah, there he is.
27 games played? So he's
70 pitches, 45 strikes.
So fairly stretched out, you think?
I think he's good. You know?
Good for what, Alan?
If they need him to a couple more innings, I think he can do it.
A couple more, and if he gets a couple more, then what do you do?
I'm not saying.
Do you agree? Did you order the cold red?
I'm not ordering the cold red. I'm saying nothing. By the way, he's now giving up 2 walks.
So I'm not doing a damn thing. I'm not saying a damn thing right now.
It'll be over soon anyway, so don't worry about it.
He's given the bullpen a rest.
Yeah, I think that would be very important.
So you're saying he can go?
Don't listen.
So Alan Hahn,
they used to call me the Reaper.
Cortez,
they used to call me the Reaper.
Is going for the no hitter.
What?
Why would you do that?
How dare you?
Why would you?
Why? Seriously, why would you do that?
I'm just asking.
6 2/3 now, but why would you do that?
I'm just asking.
As Steve Kerr.
Somebody had to say
no.
It.
No.
Somebody had to say
it's
it.
All your fault now.
What?
Who? Jets.
He just walked.
Yeah.
His second guy. So
what?
Clearly he's losing the control.
No, I don't know what he's losing, but he's not. Hasn't lost anything.
He just got the second out.
Right. So it continues.
What if a button?
Don't.
Happens?
Damn you.
What's wrong with you, man?
Hey, seriously.
He's not superstitious.
I'm not superstitious.
No, he's a Mets fan.
Oh,
so
true.
He's just looking to just ruin everything.
Man, I tell you what, Scherzer, man, was scary the other day, man. I've never seen him get hit so easy.
It is kind of funny though, how even his teammates now don't know how to react with him.
Yeah,
you hear Lindor say,
smack him on the butt. Man, don't touch me. Don't say nothing to me.
You can't even tell him like anything's going well. Say nothing to him. Did you ever have a teammate like that? Like a guy like on game day, you just couldn't go near him. Like he was just so locked in, you knew he was a powder keg.
Well,
that wasn't you, was it?
No, Brandon Moore was a grouch.
All right.
But he was kind of like that. He was a grouch. He's the same guy that tried to beat Santonio Holmes up in the huddle. And Santonio ran.
That's right.
Out the huddle. So,
that's right.
You know, he was Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah, but you want offensive linemen to be like that.
Not with your own receivers.
Yeah, I don't care. Everybody. Just be on edge.
He was like Grady.
But there was no one like that, that just on a game day you're like, don't go near him. Guy's a powder keg.
Nobody was.
Not that tightly wound?
Yeah. That's why Scherzer. But, you know.
It's a little different. Your own teammates can't even, like, give you a high five. Nothing. Don't touch me. That's a little.
Yeah, like, man, bro. Like, what's his deal?
Bro, what's your deal, bro?
The NBA playoffs are on ESPN Radio. Tonight, you got the Warriors hosting the Grizzlies. It's presented by Indeed. Coverage begins 9:30 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. We got some good ones tonight, man.
And there's some
showing up that needs to be done tonight. Wouldn't you agree? Some showing up that needs to be done. We get the third out. All right, we survive.
So you can't blame me. So Nestor watch continues.
Celtics Bucks is the first game at 7:30, and then you got the Grizzlies and the Warriors. Like I said, the coverage begins at 9:30 on ESPN radio. But I mean, Jason Tatum better show up. You got to show up. Because that game 3 is enough to make people their head about, you know, where he's at.
Well, you know what happens also when somebody wins the MVP? I'm sure Giannis would be trying to remind everybody he's the best player in basketball. So you have that going as well.
You do.
Like, oh, that's your MVP? I can win it every year. I'm the best player in basketball.
Yeah. And then you have, of course, the jawless Grizzlies. 20-5 without him this season.
It's so funny how we don't mention the Middleton-less Bucks.
Ja, a little bit different than Middleton, my friend. All right, we've got more to do with you tomorrow. Everybody enjoy the games tonight. Go Yankees.
Nestor Watch.
I think he's a chicken butt sniffer.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.